What is... Dax, are you...
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker? On all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all. So we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge! Trucks up 3.9%!
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Sports.
Come on, let's get going now.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Wind swings and he drives that to left field. Back to the track and gone!
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
We're primed and ready.
All day, baby.
Man, let's go.
Now, Matt Pauly and the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly here on this Friday night. Hope it's been a good one for you. Of course, you've heard Matt the last couple of days here earlier in the weekday here on Camo X. So he now is going to take a little time off. So you've got me for the next 3 weeknights. So, of course, not over the weekend, but tonight and Monday and Tuesday. And so we'll have a little fun and we'll chat some sports as we have it right now. There's not a ton going on. There's not a lot of movement right now with the Cardinals. We hear some news trickling every once in a while about deals that may or may not happen, deals that should or shouldn't happen, all of those things. So there's not a whole ton to get into, but we'll talk a little bit about the Cardinals. We'll talk a lot more about Mizzou football. They've got a bowl game coming up on Monday. In fact, when we get on Monday, I think that's an afternoon game for Mizzou. So I don't even know if it might be over. Yeah, it's a 1:30 p.m. game on Monday, so that'll be over by the time we get on Monday night. So we'll be able to talk about that a little bit more on Monday, but we'll talk about what to expect from the Music City Bowl as they take on Iowa. So we'll do that tonight. We can talk with Jacob Sersosimo a little bit from First Alert 4. He'll be with us here this hour. We'll also talk to Drew King of PowerMizzou.com, talk all about Mizzou. And not just football, but basketball, which is they've got another non-conference game to go before they get into SEC play. Coming up here in our first segment, I guess our second segment after the break here, we'll talk to Joe Roderick, and we can talk some Cardinals with him. But again, there's not a lot going on right now. They made some announcement of some other directors last week sometime, but there's not really anything newsworthy, news breaking right now for the Cardinals. But we can talk a little bit with Joe maybe about what he thinks, what he sees coming down the pike, and then kind of what his feelings are as this offseason kind of ramps up. Of course, now we're beyond the winter meetings. We are beyond Christmas and soon to be beyond New Year, and that's when things really start kicking up a little bit. You've got winter warm-up coming up at the end of January, and we'll start getting some more news and probably some more news on a more regular basis from the Cardinals as we get into the coming weeks. And of course, here on Camo X, we'll ramp it up as well. We'll get back into the countdown to opening day shows. And boy, before you know it, we'll be talking about spring training games and teams reporting to Florida and Arizona. And we'll see what the Cardinals look like at that point. So all of that coming up. I want to get into a little bit about DeSean Jackson, the former NFL receiver who is now going to be the head coach at Delaware State. A historically black university that has just not been very good at football. But I want to get into maybe is this part of a larger trend? Because we've seen a little bit of this before DeSean Jackson. It's not that DeSean Jackson is kicking this off. In fact, really it started with Deion Sanders and when he was first hired a couple of years ago at Jackson State. So I want to get into that a little bit, and I'll also kind of compare that to Bill Belichick and Bill Belichick going to become a college coach at North Carolina, which of course he finalized just a couple of weeks back. And is there a difference there? Is that something that that we can compare those two situations? So we'll talk a little bit about that coming up in the show as well, all here on this Friday night. And coming up in the latter part of the 7 o'clock hour, maybe we'll have time for some calls as well. We'll get into maybe your thoughts on some of the things we've discussed or we had discussed by that point here. And like I said, a lot of Mizzou coming up here. I'm interested to, I'd be interested just to hear, and I'll ask Drew King this, just maybe, you know, what the outlook is, or maybe what the mood, the feeling is going into that bowl game. Because if you were to tell, Mizzou fans that they'd be looking at the Music City Bowl and getting to 10 wins at the beginning of the year, it'd be a disappointment. There's a lot of good things that they still have within their reach coming up with that Music City Bowl, but I don't think it's where Mizzou or Mizzou fans thought they would be at this point going into this college basketball season, or this college football season, rather. So I do think that for a large majority of Mizzou fans and folks that follow and pundits, I think that they probably would look at this as a disappointing finish to this season. And I don't know that it's necessarily that, but I definitely think it's not where a lot of folks expected. I think that I was chatting with Bernie Mikulas actually on a this was a Sports on a Sunday program a couple of weeks back, and we were talking about the season that Mizzou was having then and the season that Indiana was having, and he said Indiana was having the season that Mizzou expected to have, and I think that that is pretty accurate, because I think that's what folks thought they were in for this year after the good season last year from Mizzou and what they had coming back, and it just didn't work out that way. But again, there is a lot of good things that are still to play for, a lot of good things to come from Mizzou as they get into the Music City Bowl. So we'll have plenty of opportunity to discuss that. We'll also talk about the Blues a little bit tonight, because they're playing. They will be getting ready to play here in less than an hour, just down the road from us at Enterprise Center. They've got the Predators tonight, looking to make it two straight, and it's the first of two in a row at home before they go to Chicago for the Winter Classic to take on the Blackhawks on Tuesday. So all of those things on the table tonight. And as I said, as we get into the later portions of the 7 o'clock hour, we'll maybe have time for some phone calls as well. Coming up here in our next segment, though, we'll talk to Joe Roderick, and he of KlabesOnline.com, and you hear him all over the place as well. So we'll chat with him about all things Cardinals, college football playoff, all those things coming up. As we continue here on the Graybar Sports Open Line on a Friday, Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. We're coming back after the break. Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on a Friday night. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly tonight. Glad you have chosen to spend some time with us. And just a variety of things on the docket tonight for us to talk about, and a variety of things for us to talk about with Joe Roderick, our good friend, who joins us here from KlabesOnline.com and various other sources. Joe, hope Christmas and the holidays have been great to you so far.
Absolutely. I have an 11-year-old at home, so he just got spoiled, as usual.
Fantastic. That's always good. And now enjoying, I think, I would assume probably some downtime to enjoy all of the spoils, as it were, right?
Absolutely. Plus Squid Game just came out on Netflix, so I have that until football starts back up again tomorrow.
So we can start right there. I was we were chatting off air earlier this afternoon, and we were talking just about what was to come tonight. But college football, certainly plenty of bowl. Are you interested in any bowls outside of the college football playoff?
No, and no. I don't think I ever will be ever again outside of maybe that oversized Pop-Tart that they make edible. They make the mascot edible in the one bowl game. There's no reason to pay attention to any of the bowl games ever again, because if you have a star player in any of those games, why on earth would they play in a meaningless game if they're going to be in the draft in April? There's no reason to play and risk injury in a game that means absolutely nothing. The whole regular season was so exciting, one week after another, leading to the field of 12 that we saw, that, you know, all the top players, the Travis Hunters, the Shedeur Sanders, and any of the other top guys, like Cam Ward, those guys that didn't make the top 12, There's no reason for them to go out there and risk any kind of injury. They did what they needed to do in the regular season. Their draft stock is where it's going to be. And now we get to watch a true playoff over the next, I guess, over a month of the season now extended, and the games actually matter. And I, regardless of whether they were blowouts or not last week, I really enjoyed watching playoff football, college football, for the first time ever.
Yeah, playoff college football. That's how I felt as well. Just the fact that it was something completely different. It was the chance to advance and keep playing, and then, of course, the finality for those that weren't going to advance, and it definitely had a playoff feel to it, something we haven't had the chance to experience before.
Not to mention, you had, for the first time, you had these teams that were hosting home games on campus in the playoff, like hosting games in December for the first time ever. It was unheard of to have these games. What was it? Notre Dame's first time playing a Friday night game since 1900.
Yep.
You have stories like that to where now these kids are out in the elements. We're maybe one game late in the year they'd have to play in the cold. Now you have these kids playing games in home stadiums or teams going on the road to places that their schools probably never would have put them in those situations. And now they're having to do it with something on the line. And I thought it was great. And for all of the complaining that happened afterwards with all of the lopsided games, that's what we wanted, isn't it? And plus, we got that enough when it was a Final Four. We got that plenty of times. You had plenty of blowouts when it was 1-4 and 2-3. So, of course, if it's 5-12, yeah, 5 should win that every single time. That's what made them the fifth best team in the nation, and that's why they were playing at home. But we should reward those 12th-place teams or those 11th-place teams for their body of work in the regular season. And it should be something that is earned throughout the regular season and not just given to you because, okay, the eye test says that, okay, maybe Alabama and Ole Miss were better. Okay, they lost 3 times. Give those teams the opportunity for all the times that we had Boise State or TCU or last year Florida State that didn't make the tournament. Now these teams that earned their spot can at least make it and say that they were given a chance.
Yeah, doesn't it? I mean, it feels like it doesn't matter where we're at, right? Number-wise, you're always going to have the talk of who those last few seeds to get in were and who the first few that weren't. I mean, we've got 64 in the basketball tournament, and we're still talking about, or I guess 68, but we're still talking about who was 69, 70, 71. Couldn't they have possibly been in? And wouldn't we rather see a better big market team than a worse small market team or the other way around? But those are the same kind of arguments now you get from a college football playoff.
Right, and let's face it, if it wasn't Alabama, would we really be complaining? If it was Mizzou that was the first team out, do you really think that College Game Day and some of the other national people like Paul Feinbaum would have been going to bat for Mizzou rather than a team like Alabama?
Yeah, certainly not outside of Columbia and St. Louis and surrounding areas, right? Like, there's no question about it. Joe Roderick with us here. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. I was just going to ask because I saw Nick Saban this morning talking about that where he was really felt like that they may have gotten it wrong was rewarding the conference champs with those buys because he feels like the Ohio State-Oregon matchup is too good to be in this quarterfinal route.
Yeah, and I don't, you know, maybe that's something that you change. Maybe there's reseeding, but I don't think it would have mattered. With this, I don't know how you go about doing that because maybe Arizona State didn't deserve to get a first round bye. Boise State, I think you could have made the argument that they did. So maybe there is something that changes there. But at some point, though, this is kind of the argument to make, and I think it's the same way in the basketball tournament too. At some point, to be crowned the best team, wouldn't Oregon have had to beat Ohio State again, or wouldn't Ohio State have had to beat Oregon again? So does it matter if it's in the round of 8 or the round of 4 in the championship game?
Yeah, no, I think that was Saban's argument that it should come in the semis or the final, and his argument was the conference champ as opposed to just picking, you know, going 1-12 and seeding them that way as opposed to putting weight on those conference championships or conference champions.
Yeah, I hope they at least let it run a few years before they make tweaks into the system. Let's let it play out and see how things go 3 years instead of jumping to conclusions after year one.
I would agree. I 100% agree with you. Let's see. I mean, like you said, we're watching college playoff football for the first time ever, and it's pretty darn cool. So, but that's step number one. Joe Roderick with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe, I do want to get into a little bit of the Cardinals, but I also want to talk about the news of the hour, the news of the afternoon, and that is the loss of Greg Gumbel. And for folks like you and I that are certainly avid sports fans, but we're also, you know, we're sports broadcaster fans, this is a big loss. It feels like a terrible loss.
Right. He was the voice, it seemed like. I mean, he was the voice of sports on CBS for my life. As long as I can remember, when you would turn on the TV on Selection Sunday, Greg Gumbel was the guy who welcomed you in. He was the one who told you where the teams were playing. It was, you know, he was the voice. He was the guy that would do that for you. And then his years with the NFL, and I think the way I would describe, he had such a calming voice. It was just so. It really was. It was calm. It was warm, and it was one of those you just really enjoyed listening to him talk and go about explaining what was going on, or just giving you the news, the sports news for the day, where in today's world there's so much screaming and yelling by a lot of these guys. That wasn't who Greg Gumbel was.
Really welcoming voice. You're right. It definitely made you feel like that good things were coming, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, and just, yeah, the Sunday football, the pregame show, and the college basketball, just going back into the studio for all those years while you're watching the games on that first weekend or just those first few weekends. Yeah, he'll always be remembered as the voice and the face of the college basketball playoffs.
Yeah, I agree. So a couple more minutes with Joe Roderick here. Let's talk a little bit Cardinals. Just maybe, I mean, obviously there's no news right now. It is really slow. We only hear just a couple of things every now and then about, you know, what might be or what should or shouldn't be. What are your expectations, and specifically when you're talking about someone like either Nolan Arenado or maybe a Sonny Gray, do those guys get moved? Do they go to spring with those two in a Cardinals uniform?
I think they find a way to move Arenado, and I think that's the only move that happens. I think that is the one that will for sure happen. I don't know. It seems to me like Nolan Arenado wants to be a Dodger, right? The little teases that he puts out on Instagram rejecting the trade to Houston. We've seen the list of where he potentially would waive a no-trade clause to. It does seem like he wants to go to L.A. with the Dodgers now re-signing Teoscar Hernandez. I don't know what kind of money they have. I mean, is it just unlimited money that they think they're going to make for years and years?
I don't know. They just keep deferring it, too.
Right. So I do think that they move on from Nolan Arenado. I think they find somebody to take him, whether it is the Yankees or maybe at some point. Do the Phillies have to make a move at some point? Because they're sitting there watching the Mets go and sign Juan Soto, and who knows, maybe have money left over for Pete Alonso. So I think there are suitors out there for Nolan Arenado. I just don't know where yet.
Yeah, I tend to feel like he's not going to be there either. And you know, when it comes to Sonny Gray, to me, it feels like that Sonny Gray would be the kind of guy that the Cardinals would be going after as they get into this rebuild, right? The sort of older, better days are behind him. That's kind of what you have in Sonny Gray right now. You might get lucky, might have a really good season still. And as, at least as far as I've read and I've heard, he doesn't want to leave right now.
No, and I imagine your interactions with Sonny Gray, you've probably realized this too. He seems like he's such a creature of habit, to where he signed this deal with the Cardinals, and in his mind, he is going to fulfill this entire deal with the Cardinals. He's going to be here for all of it and does not want to be moved. And he is just going to be set, and he's going to remain a St. Louis Cardinal until they stop paying him. And I think he'll be a decent voice of reason too, as he enters year two and is now familiar with the way the Cardinals organization runs and spring training goes. I think he's now going to be that leader there.
Yeah, that's the way I feel too. Let's not forget he's got some family here that is, you know, in the area, and his wife is from this area, so that certainly plays into it. But I agree with your creature of routine, creature of habit, and You're right. We might see a better Sonny Gray after 1 year in the organization and getting the full, you know, lead up, build up to this season as well. So it remains to be seen. Joe, it's always good to catch up with you. Appreciate you doing this tonight, and have a great rest of your holiday break, your family time, and certainly a great Happy New Year, man.
Absolutely. I think you got Leathernecks Cougars coming up soon, right?
I do indeed. We have Leathernecks Cougars coming up on Thursday night at SIUE. That's a national TV matchup, by the way.
Oh, nice. I will be in touch with you.
Well, that is great. I would look forward to seeing you then out there at SIUE, if that's the case.
All right, Joe. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Joe. Always appreciate it. Good to catch up with Joe Roderick here on this Friday night. We'll keep things moving. We'll visit with Jacob Sersosimo of First Alert 4. He's coming up on the other side of the break as the Graybar Sports Open line continues here on a Friday. I'm Joe Pott, in for Matt Pauly. Coming right back. We're back in on the Graybar Sports Open line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly tonight. Glad you're with us on a Friday night here in St. Louis. A little bit rainy. It's not really cold, but a little bit drizzly here outside as we head towards a new year. And I am glad to welcome on Jacob Sersosimo with us here from First Alert 4. Jacob, thanks for taking some time tonight, man.
Thanks, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I appreciate it. And I hope that the holidays have been good to you thus far.
Yeah, they've been good. I worked on Christmas Eve and Christmas, but I got some good FaceTime calls to my family and friends back home. But it was all good. Actually, spending time with them while you're away from home is actually quite nice, to be honest.
Well, good. I'm glad that has been the case. Wanted to chat just a little bit about a couple things. I know one of the things you let me know, you're headed up to Chicago for the Winter Classic coming up here in a couple of days. The Blues have a chance to build up a little momentum, perhaps, before going to Wrigley. They had lost three straight, but they get the win over Detroit. Now they're back home for two straight. Do you feel like we're getting an idea of what this Blues team is now after the coaching change?
Yeah, I mean, we're hoping to. I think that's the feel of the Blues fans right now. I think one important note that I really remember when looking at what they've kind of done in their body of work ever since November 24th and Jim Montgomery took over is, I believe it was Black Friday, the day after Thanksgiving, it was their first practice. And I went to it, and it was our first time hearing from Montgomery here in St. Louis, and someone asked the question, you know, when do you like the, you know, have everything integrated with your team when it comes to in the fall or moving into the season? And he was like, well, I usually like to have everything done by Thanksgiving, where as far as how he plays the game, how he coaches the game, all the new guys, all the old guys, it all in the system. Well, it was the day after Thanksgiving. He just got hired for a new job. So I think, yes, he had a lot of success early on when the Blues got here. But then I think if the last 2 or 3 weeks really taught us anything as those who cover the Blues or Blues fans in general, is that these players are the same players that have gone through three coaching changes. And I'm not saying the players are bad, but I'm just saying it's not a quick fix when you bring in a new coach. They're still going to kind of have some of the struggles they had under Berube at the very end. They're still going to have some of the same struggles they had under Bannister when he got fired. And bringing in Monty, although it helps, I think what Army did as far as the long-term vision, bringing him in for 5 years, signing him for that contract, he knows what he's doing long-term. And I think, you know, probably myself included got caught up in what he did in the first, you know, five games. Oh my gosh, everything's looking so good for the Blues right now. And then they struggle a little bit in December, but going into that Christmas break, kind of back to your original question, you know, winning 4-0 at Detroit and the way Dylan Holloway played and then getting a couple games under their belt here at home before heading to Chicago, I think is, you know, a step in the right direction, especially if you can win in Chicago on the Winter Classic on that big stage. I think from there you kind of catapult into 2025 and good things can happen.
And, of course, the Blues have a great record so far in Winter Classic games, and they'll try to extend that against the Blackhawks there at Wrigley. I've really enjoyed the play of Dylan Holloway so far. It looks like a huge coup pulled off by Doug Armstrong in that summer offer sheet signing.
Yeah, he has the potential to be elite, and I think that's kind of what he's shown, you know, Blues fans and really the NHL over the last, you know, few months that he's been here in St. Louis. the Blues were really excited to get him and Broberg. And I think off the bat, you saw what Broberg was able to do when he went on that point streak to start the season. And these are just two players that we talk about this with the Cardinals, I think, all the time, where you have young guys that when they get called up or when they get put in big spots and they have no worry of being demoted or they have no worry of making mistakes, they can play a lot more free and play really well. We saw that with Mason Wynn this year. Who was going to replace him at shortstop? Really nobody. And he could come in, he could make mistakes, he could you know, go 0-for-4 in a game and not worried about getting sent down to Memphis. And I think that's what you're seeing with Dylan Holloway right now. Not that he was going to get demoted while he was up in Edmonton, but here he has more of a spot. The Blues have put the trust in him, and they're like, come here and grow. And him and Broberg are doing just that, I think. And I think that's why you're seeing them flourish here. You know, Holloway doesn't score a lot to begin the season, and then now he kind of is hitting his stride, and the Blues are allowing him to do that.
Yeah, second on the team in goals right now, coming into tonight, 13 of them, and he's in the top five in total points. Jacob Sersosimo with us from First Alert 4 here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Friday night. As the Mizzou Tigers get ready for a bowl game on Monday, or on Tuesday, no, Monday, right?
I was Monday, right the first Monday time. Afternoon, 1:30.
Monday afternoon, 1:30. What is the, you know, you've been around this team, and I said earlier on in the show that I think if you had said this would be the case going into the season, they're going to be in a bowl game, they're going to be trying to get to 10 wins. That's all fine and well, but that's not where most Mizzou fans and folks around the program expected this team to be at this point in time.
Yeah, and I think after the Mississippi State game, I believe, when I was in Starkville covering that game for Matrix Midwest and our Mizzou live show, Drinkwitz even said, this hasn't necessarily been the year that we had all hoped for, and it really just comes from the two really bad games they had against Bama and they had against Texas A&M. The really unfortunate part is the last 3-4 weeks, even with that loss at South Carolina, this Mizzou team has played really, really good ball. They looked really good at South Carolina. They just got beat at the last second. The defense gives up that late touchdown. And then they look really good at Mississippi State. And even though Mississippi State's Mississippi State this year, they still looked really, really good. It was just, I mean, obviously their fault for playing not well at A&M and at Alabama that kind of took them out of any sort of mix of having the year that they probably wanted to have. I think it's really telling, though, what they're building at Mizzou, that a lot of their guys are still playing in this bowl game. They're playing Iowa, which is not necessarily the most exciting opponent if you're Mizzou. You're playing in Nashville, which is, you know, maybe not the most exciting place that you want to play if you're going to a bowl game. I don't want to say a long ways, but it's a distance from playing in the Cotton Bowl last year against Ohio State. However, all their guys, Brady Cook's still going to be there. Theo Weiss Jr. is still going to be there. Johnny Walker Jr. is still going to be there. There's only like three guys, Membu, Chuck Hicks, and Luther Byrne III, that have opted out of playing. And, you know, those guys got a future in the NFL. So I think it is really telling of this team that they're really, you know, buying into one more game. Some of it I was surprised by, to see this many players want to play in the bowl game, especially since of where it's at and who they're playing. But they want to, and they want to end with 10 wins. Now, disappointing? Could be. You could definitely go that route. But I think it's more of what they're building. And it seems – I don't want to, like, sugarcoat this, but, like, they are building something there, and it's their second good season in a row. This is not Alabama we're talking about.
No, you make a great point, and I don't mean that's necessarily – I don't think that they should be looking at it as disappointing. I think it's more that those of us from the outside in, maybe just when you compare that to where maybe the expectations, where the hopes were of this team going into this year, I think that's where maybe I would get the – disappointing for the Mizzou fans and maybe some folks who thought that it was going to be a step up from last year. And to be honest, like you said, it's those two games that kill you, and then you play a really good game in South Carolina, you come up short, and ultimately that's that third loss that really puts the nail in it.
And to be honest, it's really hard to have one good season in the SEC and turn around the next year and be like, all right, this it's a college football playoff or bust, to be honest, because they did have a record season last year compared to where they were you know, the last decade leading into last year. They lose their starting running back in Cody Schrader. They lose Javon Foster on the offensive line. Darius Robinson leaves on the defensive line, and all their safety or all their cornerbacks are gone into the NFL. So they did lose some guys. They bring back key guys like Luther Burden III, Theo Weiss Jr., like I mentioned, and Brady Cook. However, if you're looking at this team at the beginning of this season and it's college football playoff or bust, I think sometimes you do need to take a step back and look at the big picture of what Drink is building. And yes, they had the team to probably do that. They had two really bad games, but they're not the same team they were last year. They don't have the same schedule they had last year. They don't have the same talent they had last year. Yes, they have different talent that they brought in, but it's not really totally comparable, if you're asking me. And the SEC just keeps getting better and better each year. And in the ever-evolving world of college athletics, and every team looks so different every year.
That is what is most interesting, and is going to be continue to be most interesting from year to year, is how the teams look from year to year. I really appreciate you taking some time tonight, as we said, on short notice. It's always good to talk to you, to catch up a little bit. I'm sure we'll do it again as we go along, but have a great rest of your holiday season, a great new year, Jacob.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Joe. Always appreciate it. Happy New Year to you and yours over there.
Beautiful. That's Jacob Sersosimo from First Alert 4 and Matrix Midwest with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line. We'll wrap up hour number one. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly. We're coming back after this on Camo X.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on Camo X.
It's Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Friday night as the Graybar Sports Open Line continues here on this Friday on KMOX. Happy to have you along as we wrap things up here in this 7 o'clock hour. We do have more to go. Obviously, we've got another hour to go as well. Joe Roderick mentioned the Teoscar Hernandez coming back to the Dodgers, and I was just chatting with Johnny Camp, who's on the other side of the board here for us tonight, behind the board running the controls, and we were just kind of discussing and talking about the deferred money, and that's what one of the things that Joe brought up when we were chatting at the beginning of the hour is just how much more deferred money is piling up for the Los Angeles Dodgers with the Teoscar Hernandez deal, which is a $66 million deal, a three-year $66 million deal, actually includes a fourth-year option, but it's close to $23 million in deferred money. So eventually you get to that point where it feels great now. It feels like, okay, we can put a little bit of this off and that doesn't come for a couple of years. But what happens as that continues to pile up? Because eventually that catches up with you. Ask the Mets, who are going to have Juan Soto and Bobby Bonilla actually on the same payroll because of deferred money. But ask the Mets how that has worked out. And it is just, there has to come a point at some point that you have to stop. I think Tommy Edman's deal, that his new deal, I think he had deferred money on it that he just recently signed with the Los Angeles Dodgers. We know Shohei Ohtani has deferred money on his contract. So at some point that catches up. And then the question becomes is what happens if or when there does become a salary cap in baseball. It feels like at some point there will be some sort. It may not look the same as some of the other sports, but it does feel like there's going to have to be some sort of breaking point there. And at least for now, the Dodgers just continue to spend the money, except for Nolan Arenado, which they don't honestly need Nolan Arenado. And as we were talking about, it seems like that's where he wants to go, but it doesn't mean that that's where he's going to land because, I don't know, the Dodgers look like they're in pretty good shape, as is the defending World Series champions continue to load up in bringing back Teoscar Hernandez. I was looking at essentially they have very much the same projected 2025 starting lineup. And now also then you're going to talk about Shohei Ohtani being added back in as a pitcher, whether he comes back in the rotation or whether they start him in the bullpen, however that looks. I mean, they were throwing out the possibility of, oh, maybe in the World Series we'll see that, which was crazy and obviously didn't have to come to fruition. But we are going to see that in 2025, so it is, as it looks, going to be an even better Los Angeles Dodgers team than the team that went on to win the World Series in 2024. That'll be interesting to kind of watch how that goes. And obviously we know the Yankees continue to load up, the defending American League champions trying to do what they can to keep pace with the LA Dodgers and to ultimately have a chance to get back to the World Series themselves and to win another World Series themselves, something they have not done in quite a long time, which feels really odd to me. To say, I started thinking about that when that World Series was taking place, and you start thinking back that the Cardinals have won a World Series more recently than the Yankees have won a World Series. And when you think about now where the Cardinals are and where the last 2 years have been and where we know they are going to be, or maybe I should say where they're not going to be over the next couple of years, it feels odd to say that the Cardinals have won a World Series more recently than the Yankees have won a World Series, but they have not won a World Series since 2009. When they opened their ballpark. So it does seems odd. And it seems like obviously that has become what they are trying to do, is to ultimately get back to the World Series and now to have a chance to win the World Series. But they've got to keep pace with the Dodgers in order to do that. I did mention that I wanted to talk about DeSean Jackson going to Delaware State. I will do that. I'm going to move that to the 7 o'clock hour. I was going to do it here, but I didn't have as much time here at the end of this hour as I thought that I might. So we can get into that a little bit in the 7 o'clock hour. We've also going to talk to Drew King of PowerMizzou.com, get much more into Mizzou and the upcoming Music City Bowl and what that looks like. And I thought Jacob Sersosimo raised a very good couple of points there, just talking about the state of this Missouri program. And maybe I misspoke a little bit when I said disappointing. I certainly didn't mean that this was a disappointing season, but I just felt like maybe with all we talked about going into the season. So we can get into more of that with Drew King coming up a little bit later in the 7 o'clock hour. So we've got hour number two of the Graybar Sports Open Line coming up for you after the news, and we'll get into all of that. And again, hopefully have some time for some calls. I'm Joe Pott, in for Matt Pauley. We're back after the news on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley as the Graybar Sports Open Line continues on this Friday night. Matt's taken a little bit of time off, as I said. You've heard him over the last couple of days earlier on in our programming during the day, but he is taking a few days off, so I will be in again on Monday and Tuesday of next week as we close out 2024 and get into 2025. Talked a little bit about this earlier on in the show, and I talked with Joe Roderick about this, but really haven't mentioned it as much as I should have. The loss of Greg Gumbel, the longtime CBS sportscaster, to cancer today. It was just announced within the last couple of hours. You've heard it here. You've heard it on CBS News as well, just talking about the impact he had. And I saw a piece on Twitter here that just kind of listed some of the social media reaction to Greg Gumbel and the passing of Greg Gumbel. And if it doesn't give you an idea of what kind of man he was, not just broadcaster, but certainly what kind of person he was, all of the tweets, all the social media tributes that I've read just kind of give you an idea from a wide variety of folks that have worked with him, some that have worked basically for him. I saw a tweet from Jeremy Shepp, who of course now with ESPN, and whose dad was a longtime sportscaster as well, actually wrote for Greg Gumbel during a couple of Olympics broadcasts that Greg covered. And of course, we talk about him all the time with the NFL and with college basketball, but you forget that he also anchored a couple of Olympics coverage, including the 1994 Winter Olympics, which, as it turns out, still remain. I think that what it said anyway in the tweet was second highest rated program ever, and the highest rated non-scripted program ever. And of course, when you think about the 1994 Winter Olympics, that was the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan Olympics. So that's why they carried such ratings. But then you think about, here's a sports program, and the only program that ranks higher, at least at that time that he was referencing, was the MASH finale, the finale of the TV, the series finale of the TV program MASH. But when you think about a sports program drawing that kind of ratings, and then you think about, here's something that he flawlessly handled, but he just talked about, Jeremy Shepp talked about not only that, but of course how he was treated as somebody essentially working under Greg Gumbel. And that's been really the sentiment from everybody that I've read, from Armin Katan, who worked with him on CBS on the NFL broadcast, Seth Davis, who, of course, has been a longtime fixture on the college basketball programs with Greg Gumbel, that it's just that kind of loss of the person he is, that you just don't find some people are saying you don't find a kinder person out there. And certainly that's not always the case in our profession in sports broadcasting, that it's not somebody who is more interested in reaching the top and doesn't care who they hurt or how they get there to reach the top. At least from everything I've read there, that's not the case with Greg Gumbel. And so it's such a huge loss. And like we were talking when I was talking to Joe Roderick, he said it's always going to feel like something's missing, you know, when you get ready, especially for the March Madness coverage, starting with Selection Sunday, all the way through the tournament, all the way through One Shining Moment. It feels like that voice should be Greg Gumbel that you're hearing. And that's, I think, how most of us that have grown up in this era of the college basketball tournament on CBS, and now, of course, TNT, Turner, but those same networks, those Turner networks, that has always been that sort of steady force there was Greg Gumbel. But I, too, like Joe, remember him on NFL broadcast, not just hosting the studio show, which he did, but he was one of the top teams as far as the play-by-play goes. So he was one of the broadcast teams that actually brought us the games that we were listening to and that we were watching on the NFL. And it's just a huge loss. And I think that, you know, obviously something maybe was up when we were told last year, when he did miss the tournament last year because of what was at the time cited as family health issues. But I think probably it had more to do with his health. Now, knowing what we know and learning what we learned, that he has been fighting a battle with cancer, according to his family. But what a huge loss to, like I said, not just the sports world, but certainly those of us who are keen on the sports broadcasters as well, that he has passed away at 78, that he has passed away today. So wanted to get to that. I still want to get into the DeSean Jackson going to Delaware State. I just read a really interesting tweet, too, that sort of meshes with what my point is going to be on DeSean Jackson, and that is thinking about Jim Larrañaga, who just stepped down out of nowhere as the head basketball coach at Miami. And he made a comment about, you know, he got to the Final Four and then he had eight of his players leave. And he was, you know, in his mind, it was sort of like, what's going on here? And boy, I'm going to have to go back and look. It was Iman Brennan, I think, who tweeted that the lack of self-awareness from some of the coaches was more surprising to him. Because he understands, obviously, that there is a big change, and a lot of these coaches that have been around for a long time have to adjust to that change, but also there has to be some self-awareness, and I think we've seen some of that as well, just that there hasn't been as much of that self-awareness as maybe is expected, because it's kind of been building towards this, and maybe it's getting worse, and certainly is a lot different now with the name, image, and likeness ruling. But I think that's where we come into someone like DeSean Jackson. So there's your tease for coming up in just a little bit. We'll get into that and why I think it makes more sense than maybe some people believe to have someone like DeSean Jackson coming to Delaware State to be head football coach, and someone like Bill Belichick coming to North Carolina to be the head football coach, because it all ties into kind of the landscape that we're living now in college athletics. So we can get into that again coming up in just a little bit. I'll take a break here. We'll come back and roughly 7:20 or so, we'll visit with Drew King from PowerMizzou.com and talk a lot more about the Music City Bowl in Mizzou and Iowa coming up next week. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauley here on this Friday night. Break coming up, and we're coming right back after the break on KMOX. Joe Pott back in on the Graybar Sports Open Line here on a Friday night. In for Matt Pauley tonight, and we're glad to continue the conversation and talk a little bit more Mizzou as we welcome in Drew King from PowerMizzou.com. Drew, I appreciate you taking some time here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, hopefully the holidays have treated you well so far. Are you already in Nashville?
No, so I only cover the basketball team, and I'm actually going to take the December 30th game off. So I'm in Texas this week with my family, spending the holidays.
Well, fantastic. Glad to hear that. So That changes a little bit because I thought it was football and basketball, but we can talk basketball, no problem.
Yeah.
There coming off, Mizzou coming off the what turned out to be a fantastic game and a narrow loss in the bragging rights game to Illinois. Are you at all surprised at how quickly this team has turned around from last year, or is it just a case of last year just got to be worse than we thought it was going to be?
I think it's a little bit of both, right? You think back on last year, they obviously dealt with a lot of injuries. They had Caleb Grill go down pretty early. They decided to shut John Tonjay down, and both of those guys were having really good seasons this year. Obviously, Caleb Grill got injured again, but you know, I don't know that if those two guys had been healthy, they would have been a tournament team, but they also wouldn't have gone 0-19 to end the year. So I think that that's definitely been a big turnaround, is just kind of the health aspect and the team having everyone available and being a lot deeper. But then, yeah, on top of that, like, I think that they hit on a lot of portal guys, obviously, and the guys who did stick around from last year's team have all developed and taken an extra step forward. So it's been a little surprising just to see, you know, they've already won more games this year than they had all last season. But yeah, I think it's been pretty impressive for sure.
And I think that if you go back to Dennis Gates' first year, that was sort of the opposite, right? That was he made it very clear the way the route he was going was he was going to collect some transfers. He was going to bring in some experience in that first year, and it all kind of hit. And so I think that also kind of when you transpose the two, when you go from what they had in 23-24, or I guess 22-23 to 23-24, and now you go the other way, it gives you, it's kind of that feeling as well that there was such a contrast from those 2 years that maybe we shouldn't be surprised that they're on the up this year.
Yeah, and you know, Dennis Gates puts a lot of effort into trying to get his guys to gel early on. He works with a sports psychiatrist named Dr. Joe Carr, who actually worked with him when he was a player at Cal, and he's just kept that relationship. And they do a lot of team building during the off season and even during the season. You know, Dr. Joe Carr, you'll see him around often. So, yeah, like I think that Dennis Gates really tries to emphasize, he wants his players to get along and get to know each other and make memories throughout the season, right? He wants this to be a team that you can look back on and really smile about. And so that's something that he puts a lot of effort into.
I think a lot of times when we're looking at college coaches and when we're evaluating college coaches, especially being new to the program, and you look at them in two different ways, right? Recruiting wise, X's and O's wise. And now obviously you've brought up what I think a lot of coaches are doing, and that is sort of we're making this about the experience and what we've got. And, you know, with the way college sports are in general, a lot of times it's literally a focus on the here and now, right? So do you like the balance where Dennis Gates is as a recruiter and then where he is, you know, game decision wise?
Yeah. So I think that what he's done as a recruiter probably stands out a little bit more, just because obviously he brought in a top five class this past year, and has landed multiple four stars, over the past couple of seasons. And he always, one thing I've always heard from recruits that have come is just how much he tries to get to know them off the court. You know, he tells each of them he wants to be somebody that's invited to their wedding someday. So I think that he definitely stands out as a recruiter. On the court, you can pick apart different decisions. But so far through 3 years, you know, obviously last season got derailed, but this season and his first year, I think it's been pretty impressive what he's done. You know, they have a pretty specific way that they want to play, which is up-tempo, and getting some really efficient looks on offense and then just creating chaos on defense. And it's a style that's kind of tough to prepare for if you're an opposing team. You know, Brad Underwood said nobody in the country creates chaos better than Missouri. So that's pretty high praise from somebody as good as Brad Underwood. I think that he's probably still got a little ways to go as far as a decision maker in games, but I think that he's pretty balanced on both fronts.
And I think, as we talked to Drew King here, Mizzou basketball writer for PowerMizzou.com, but I think when you talk about, you know, the thing, like you were talking about having the sports psychologist around, making it a point of making these strong young men, I almost think that that is as important when you're looking at building a program, because you're trying ultimately to, I mean, I feel like you've got to be recruiting your current guys sometimes harder than you're recruiting the incoming guys.
Absolutely. And I think that that's something that Dennis Gates takes a lot of pride in, is making sure that his guys know that he's there for them. And as much as they're looking toward the future, like, they want this to be a good experience for them in the present. So that's definitely something that he tries to harp on, for sure.
This has been an interesting non-conference schedule. When you look at who they face, they start things out with Memphis. They lost there, but then they end up winning eight in a row, which includes, obviously, the defeat of number one Kansas. You play a team like Illinois, who I've seen in person and I think is really, really good. Where do you think this what do you think this schedule has done for the Tigers as they get set? Obviously, one more non-conference game and then SEC play coming up in January.
I think it's kind of turned down the volume on some of the doubters, right? Like, last season took away a lot of goodwill that Dennis Gates had built up, and this season he's gained some of it back with this non-conference schedule. You know, I came into the year thinking this was going to be a team like right on the edge of the NCAA tournament bubble. And I think over the last 12 games, the team's confidence has grown a lot. And so I think that now not only should they be a bubble team, but I think the expectation should be that they make the tournament this year. That game against Kansas was huge. They were really competitive, like you said, against a pretty good Illinois team. They were up big on Memphis and kind of let the game slip away in the second half. So they're going to be pretty competitive this year, I think. But the SEC is such a gauntlet, so it's still going to be an uphill climb. But they should be in the mix every single game, in my opinion.
Drew King with us here from PowerMizzou.com. You said the SEC is a gauntlet. It's actually, I mean, it's unreal when you look at it, when you think about what the rest of the league has done in non-conference play. And when you think about South Carolina with 9 wins and 3 losses, has the least amount of wins, the most amount of losses in all of the SEC in non-conference play. It is, I think it's probably hard for people to imagine what it's like facing a conference slate like that.
For sure. It really hasn't been done in this league specifically ever. And it's just been very rarely done before. I think that the SEC has a real chance to get 12 or even 13 teams into the big dance this year, just because of how dominant they've been going up against other leagues. So like you said, South Carolina is being pegged as the weakest in the conference right now. I wouldn't be surprised at all if they go 7-11, you know, like, because it's going to be a coin flip every night. I think that 8-10 for most teams, that's going to get you into the tournament. 7-11, depending on how your non-conference schedule went, which for most teams, it went pretty well.
Right.
it's like that might give you an at-large play-in berth. You never know. So it's going to be an absolute bloodbath. It's going to be really exciting. And so for Mizzou, like, I saw something today where they were tied for the worst odds to win the SEC championship this year. And on the one hand, maybe that's not crazy. They've had a relatively lighter schedule compared to everyone else. But at the same time, like, they're the only ones with a win over the number one team in the country. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see how it all shakes out.
And when you look at this, I think it doesn't matter what conference you're in, college basketball. I love conference play, first of all, because of the intensity that it brings every single night. But, of course, what ultimately or what usually separates the top of the conference from the middle and the bottom is that picking up some of those wins on the road. When you look at the non-conference schedule for the SEC, there are two home losses from the entire conference. Texas has lost at home and South Carolina has lost, and they've each only lost once at home. So when you're talking about the opportunity to maybe go pick up a road win here or there, it becomes all the more tough.
Right. And Mizzou starts on the road at Auburn, which is going to be just like one of the toughest games they've played this season, for sure. Because we talked about their non-conference schedule. They've only been out of the state once, and it was in the season opener against Memphis. So this is their first time going back into a hostile environment. They've obviously grown a lot. But, man, like, there isn't really a game where you can catch your breath at any point. You know, most seasons you look at the SEC, and there's about four teams where you can say, okay, they'll probably win against this team, even if they're on the road. There's not a team like that this year. So as important as picking up a road win here or there is, I think it's going to be even more important to defend home court. And so that's where I think you're going to see the big differences being made.
Yeah, you make a great point. You've got to hold serve at home against some of these teams as well. Mm-hmm. Drew King is with PowerMizzou.com. You can follow him on X at DrewKing0222. Drew, I appreciate it. First time you and I have had a chance to chat, so I appreciate you taking some time out of your Friday night. I hope the rest of the holiday season treats you well and enjoy your time at home.
Absolutely. You too.
Drew King with us here on the Graybar Sports Open Line, talking a little Mizzou hoops. We appreciate that. We'll come back here onto the Graybar Sports Open Line. Joe Pott sitting in for Matt Pauly tonight and Monday and Tuesday, and we've got more to come coming up on the other side of the break on Camo X. Joe Pott in for Matt Pauly on this Friday night is the Graybar Sports Open Line. It continues here on Camo X. My thanks to all of our guests we've had on here tonight, a couple of open segments for you. You get to just listen to me chat, and you can maybe chime in if you would like. In our last segment, probably we might have a chance to take a call or two. I've been teasing it, though. I do want to get to this, the news that DeSean Jackson, the former wide receiver, former NFL wide receiver, is going to be the new head coach at Delaware State. And I want to play you this piece. This is Myron Metcalf on ESPN talking about just his thoughts after it was announced and kind of his feelings towards whether this is, you know, if this is a trend, where this is going, and what I guess he doesn't like about this hiring.
Why are we turning to guys who, yes, played in the league but don't have coaching experience? It's so difficult to build a high school team. I mean, you talk to, like, you see some of these successful high school programs, that's very difficult to put together a staff, to put together a winning culture and program, and to win a state championship. So to just automatically go to the collegiate ranks, even though it's a Delaware State team, I know went 1-11, I think everyone talking about Deion Sanders, you have to remember that Deion brought the Heisman Trophy winner and the number one pick in this NFL draft with him, right? At Jackson State, they knew what was coming with Deion. I don't know that DeSean Jackson will have that same pull, even though I get they're trying to draw more attention to the program. I think it's unfair to the coaches who have worked so hard to put themselves in a position to be head coaches, who have gone up the ladder, who've been assistants, who've been, you know, low-level staffers, and they're right there. And you try to get a job like this and you see DeSean Jackson gets it instead.
Yep.
I don't like that aspect of hiring these ex-NFL guys with no coaching experience.
Okay, so that's fine. He does not like that, and he feels bad for some of the coaches that have climbed the ladder, as he said, and have gotten close and then have not gotten the job. Let me tell you, that happens everywhere. That is not just the fact that DeSean Jackson played in the NFL. How much have we seen that as the norm or sort of the new coming in Major League Baseball? We're not seeing it as much right now, but for a few years we did. You can even look at right here in St. Louis when Mike Matheny was hired with zero managerial experience. You don't think there were coaches that thought that they were next in line, or there were other managers that thought they were better positioned to be in that spot than a Mike Matheny? So forget that. Yes, I understand. There are plenty of people that work their way up through their profession, get very close to, you know, what they consider to be the top spot, and they don't get it. And somebody that maybe is considered to be less qualified gets that job. Okay, so be it. I can tell you why they're going for DeSean Jackson at Delaware State. Delaware State is an HBCU, a historically black college university. One of the things, one of the big things that athletics is for an institution is a help to enrollment. Athletics brings students onto your campus, into your university. Enrollment means money. A lot of times for athletics, it means help towards athletics, because a lot of athletic departments, including SIUE, where I am employed, is funded a lot by students, is funded by student fees. So we rely on, at SIUE, we rely on student fees to help a good portion of the funding of athletics. So they are not just bringing attention to Delaware State, they are bringing students to Delaware State. This is a team that was 1-11 last year. They haven't had a winning season since 2012. They are less worried about the results on the field than they are keeping the program at a competitive rate as far as people coming in. And when you're talking about, again, we've talked about it in several other cases tonight, when you're talking about the name, image, likeness, and having to essentially recruit the players you currently have, you've got to find a way to do that. You've got to find a way to create something within your program that they're not finding in another program. And a lot of times, and at the certainly the high levels, it's just plain money. You have to create the money. You have to be able to provide the funding, the essentially payment that they're going to get elsewhere through the name, image, and likeness. At somewhere like Delaware State, I imagine you're not doing it as much with money. You want to provide them something, though, they're not getting elsewhere. And so that's DeSean Jackson. They're getting a former NFL Pro Bowler, a former NFL wide receiver as their head coach. You don't think that's part of the reason that Bill Belichick is at North Carolina? You don't think there are perhaps better, more qualified college football coaches available to North Carolina than Bill Belichick? You think Bill Belichick has a ton of experience going out and recruiting young men to come play college football? No, I'm not debating what he knows about college football or what he knows about the game of football and coaching and the X's and O's of football. But I'm also not saying that you don't know how much of that DeSean Jackson brings as well as a, again, former player at the highest level. But again, what he's providing is something that is unique to Delaware State, is something that these kids are not getting at other programs. So they're A, wanting to come to Delaware State, or B, wanting to stay at Delaware State because of DeSean Jackson being at Delaware State. And yes, Deion Sanders is a big part of that, because he went to Jackson State, said he was going to raise the profile of the school, raise the profile of HBCU institutions. He did both of those things. And then he took that opportunity to move himself up to the BCS level, the highest level of Division I football at Colorado, and he has continued that. And so that is what they are hoping they get, because if all of a sudden Delaware State becomes one of those launching pads, one of those stepping stone jobs, now you've set yourself up better going forward. Michael Vick, same thing. Michael Vick's going to be a head coach at an HBCU. I think he's at not Sacramento State. They were talking about Sacramento State. Either way, same kind of situation. He does not have the head coaching experience, but he is going to go on and he's going to do the same thing. And it's the same situation, that you are providing this program something that they're not getting at other programs. So yes, you're raising the profile, but you're also raising the probability that A, some of these athletes will then consider coming to your institution, whether it's Delaware State or wherever else we're talking about, or they're going to stay at your institution. Because unfortunately, the way it is right now in college athletics, that's the reality, is that you have to be recruiting your own players. You have to make sure that your own players want to stay from year to year. And just as Drew King was saying about Dennis Gates, when you talk about that and the things that he's doing, that's the reason he's doing that. And just as when we were talking to Jacob Sersosimo and he talked about Eli Drinkwitz and the players that are staying, but also staying to play in this bowl game, it's because of what that coach has created as far as the program and what he has done to retain those players and to make those players want to buy into the program and to continue to play for the program. You think a school that's 1-11 is really worried about how many wins DeSean Jackson's going to have next year? And do you also think DeSean Jackson's not going to be able to assemble a staff? So even if there are some places that he needs help, and yes, I guarantee you there's plenty of shortcomings there as far as what he is as a college football coach, but he can fill a lot of those holes with offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator and the multitude of other coaches that he's going to be able to bring in and bring and hire at Delaware State to allow him to be ultimately a better college football coach. And that includes a recruiting coordinator. And that includes the folks that are then going out and making that initial pitch to the recruits. And that's the same thing that Bill Belichick's going to do at North Carolina, is he's going to surround himself with those kind of coaches that are going to help him be a more successful college football coach and a recruiting coordinator that's going to help him attract that talent and make those initial finds of players, go talk to players, meetings of players, and then you send in Bill Belichick to do the closing, or you send in DeSean Jackson to do the closing. And that's the reality there, and a lot of that is because of the way that college athletics is currently structured. And so that's why a DeSean Jackson over, yes, probably many other folks who are more qualified to be there, gets that job at Delaware State to lead that team at that level. One more segment to go here on the Graybar Sports Open Line as we finish up here on this Friday evening. Joe Potts sitting in for Matt Pauley. We'll take a break. We'll come back on the other side of the break. And if you have a comment, if you have a concern, a question, if you want to get in something in the last couple of minutes, you can do that as well. We'll take your calls at 314-436-7900. If you want to weigh in on anything we've talked about here tonight, we've got just a few more minutes left on the other side of the break. Graybar Sports Open Line continues after this on Camo X. Final segment here on a Friday night. It's the Graybar Sports Open Line. I'm Joe Pott in for Matt Pauley tonight, and I'll be back on Monday and Tuesday. If I forget, Johnny Camp's been running the show tonight. Appreciate him. Kyle Sixta has helped us out as well. Certainly bringing in some guests tonight. Thanks to Joe Roderick, Jacob Sersosimo, and Drew King for joining us here on the program tonight. It's always great just to get a chance to kind of hang out and chat some sports, and I appreciate the opportunity to do that as well. Again, if you want to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, 314-436-7900, you can do that in the last few minutes of the program here. And if you want to wait, you can talk on. We can talk on Monday or Tuesday because I'll be back the next couple of nights here on Sports Open Line. And as we get into next week, we can even talk about maybe what your expectations are for the year to come for whichever teams that you want to talk about, whether it's the Blues as they finish out this season in 2025, whether it's looking forward to the Cardinals season in 2025, whether it's looking forward to St. Louis City in 2025, any of those things. We can talk about that on Monday and Tuesday of next week. But tonight, if you have any comments on anything we've talked about here tonight, I'll give you a couple of notes that I have on Mizzou and Mizzou football, because I talked a couple times just about whether is this a disappointment. Jacob Sersosimo raised some really good points when we were talking just about perhaps it was more that we were overhyping them early on. And that's not to say we were overhyping them because they weren't good, but overhyping them because it's really hard to have two back-to-back seasons like they have. This would be a 10-win season with a win over Iowa. It would be the eighth 10-win season for the Tigers. It would be three consecutive wins to end the season, and that's the second consecutive year that would happen, again, with a win over Iowa. That would be the first time that Mizzou has won three straight games to end a season since the 1913-1914 season. So you're talking about more than 110 years, since they've had three straight wins to end a season. It would be the first back-to-back top 25 ranking in 10 years since the 2013-14 season, because they'll stay there probably with a win over Iowa. Brady Cook, ton to play for. You don't realize maybe as you look back, as you think about how good Brady Cook has been in his career for the Mizzou Tigers. He's got 8,726 yards. He is 73 yards away from being the number three, in passing yards, and that's Brad Smith. He would pass Brad Smith with 73 yards of passing for his career. And he's number two in wins for a quarterback at Mizzou. So there is plenty to play for here for this Missouri Tigers team. And when you think about the players, again, that are staying, that are going to play in that game, that are not opting out of that game, it does give you an idea. And again, I'm saying this in the era of name, image, and likeness, when you're trying to retain your team as much as recruit a new team, it says something about what Eli Drinkwitz has created at Missouri. And then if you just literally take what I was saying earlier, when you think about what the expectations were from the fan base, from a fan base that has been, tortured and taunted and burned at every occasion, it feels like. And now you have a fan base going into a season saying, this is what we expect from the Tigers. And that a 10-win season for the second year in a row, only a 10-win season. Those are all good things. Those all give you an idea of where this program is at in the landscape, in the larger landscape of college football. When you look at the sellout streak that they have at Faurot Field, you start to get an idea of where this program is at in the larger landscape of Mizzou and the history of Mizzou and the, again, larger landscape of college football. I had a chance. This is just a quick story to pass along. So my daughter is a sophomore at Mizzou this year. Maddie is a sophomore at Mizzou. Maddie is a sophomore at Mizzou this year. And she's taken an interest in football, and she's gone to football games the last couple of years, which she has never been a huge sports fan. But again, when you're part of what is building at Mizzou and you're part of that week, each week, the excitement and the fun of what a successful and a quality college football team brings, you know, you get carried away, you get caught up in that. So last night I had a chance to teach her about one of the tougher moments in Mizzou football, and that would be the fifth down game during the 1990 Mizzou season, a season in which, and that was against Colorado. So we were watching a 30 for 30. I was watching a 30 for 30 on Coach McCartney at Colorado during that time when they ultimately went on to win the national championship in 1990. But of course, the fifth down game happened at Mizzou during that time when the officials failed to notice that Colorado was given an extra down. And by being given that extra down, they were able to win that game. So in fact, it appeared that they had spiked the ball on fourth down, which they had if they had kept the correct downs. But it turned out it was third down. They had another play. They went on fourth down. But it was fun to kind of share that with her on all of the things that as someone growing up and watching Mizzou and following Mizzou, some of the things that we have been, tortured with and that we have had to endure over the years as Mizzou football fans. Just to give you an idea, again, of where we've come to now, having this team only, I say that in quotes, only win 10 games this year if they get by Iowa in the Music City Bowl. So that was kind of cool just to share that with her. And I said, now, if anybody ever brings up the fifth down game to you, you, as a 20-year-old, a new 20-year-old, can understand and know exactly what the fifth down game was and understand what all of the Mizzou fans had to go through 34 years ago when that happened. My thanks again to Johnny Camp running the show for us tonight, to Joe Roderick, to Jacob Sersosimo, and to Drew King for being with us here on this Friday night. Again, I'll be back on Monday and Tuesday in this same spot, in for Matt Pauly, having Matt, letting Matt take some much-needed family time here during the holiday season, and we'll be glad to talk sports and do it again on Monday and Tuesday as we close out 2024 here on Camo X, talking all the sports news that was and what's to come in 2025. I'm Joe Pott. I'll talk to you again next week right here on America's Sports Voice, Camo X.